This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
What is the First Amendment? What forms of speech are and are not protected by the First Amendment? And why is it so important in the United States? We'll answer all of these questions and more on this edition of Getting Schooled. I'm Abby Hornacek. The First Amendment. We have talked a lot about it recently in the context of social media. Social media platforms at large regulating user comments and interactions. So it's only natural to ask questions about what our constitutional rights are under the First Amendment. Something that protects our freedom of speech, our religious liberty, things that are of the utmost importance living in the greatest country on earth. So what is protected under the First Amendment? How has social media framed our view of free speech? And how are nonverbal symbols constitutionally protected? Well, we have someone here to answer all of my questions, and she is the Deputy Director of Policy at State Voices, Fellow for the First Amendment at Freedom Forum, Lutta Knott. Lutta, thanks for coming on to exercise your freedom of speech and allowing me to do the same. We're just going to start from the beginning, if that's okay. James Madison was the chief author of the Bill of Rights, therefore the First Amendment. He was a champion of religious liberty, freedom of speech, and freedom in general. So what is the First Amendment?
Well, the First Amendment protects freedom of religion, speech, press, petition, and assembly, basically all forms of free expression. And what it does is it prevents the government from censoring our expression or punishing us for what we express.
So then what isn't protected? Because if you just have everyone kind of go out and run rampant and say whatever they want, obviously there's hate speech. There are things that we can't do. So can you just take me through some of those?
Of course. So the First Amendment, it's not unlimited. It does have its exceptions, as you said. For example, making true threats on someone else's life, that's not protected by the First Amendment. Neither is engaging in blackmail, lying on the witness stand, perjury, or speech that incites other people to commit crimes. Obscenity is not protected by the First Amendment. I will say hate speech is protected by the First Amendment, but the categories that I just mentioned are not. You can still be punished for those things, even if you were freely expressing yourself. Also very important, and a lot of people miss this, is that the First Amendment only prevents government censorship. So it won't prevent private employers or private organizations or private individuals from, say, firing me because of something that I say at work. It won't prevent my book club from kicking me out because I keep trying to change the subject from books to TV shows that I like. You know, I'm guilty of that a lot. So, but that's not my First Amendment right. I'm still expressing myself, but it's not necessarily protected by the Constitution.
I see. Yeah, because this is a conversation we have all the time with social media, right? And there was this whole discussion of, you know, Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, kind of taking people off the platform because of things that they've said. So how does that work?
Well, it's interesting because when Twitter or Facebook or Google or any of the social media platforms censor speech, when they suspend accounts, when they take down posts, it's not a First Amendment issue. And that's because they are private companies. And actually, they have the right to set their own standards about what kinds of types of content that they will allow. In fact, that's their own First Amendment right, to have their own policies and ban users as they see fit. That said, it's not a First Amendment issue, and it's not in the legal scope of the First Amendment, but I'd say it's still an important thing for us to talk about and think about because it's First Amendment-ish, not protected by the First Amendment, but it does affect the kind of conversations that we have in public, the kind of information that people receive around the world around them. So it's important to the public discourse. It's important to public knowledge, but not necessarily a First Amendment issue.
So why isn't it a First Amendment issue? Is it because these are private companies?
Exactly. Yes, because they are private companies. And since they're private companies, when they say we're only going to allow this type of speech and we are going to ban users who use that type of speech, that is these private companies exercising their own First Amendment right to set their own policies about what kind of speech they'll allow.
I see. I see. So then when it comes, you said that hate speech is protected under the First Amendment.
It is indeed, yes.
So how does how can you just break that down a little bit more for me? And then how do people get in trouble for hate speech then?
Well, hate speech is protected by the First Amendment, partly because no one can agree on what hate speech is. There's no universal definition of hate speech. A lot of speech depends on context, honestly. And that's why courts have always been hesitant to criminalize hate speech, just because what is offensive to one person may not be offensive to another person. Now, social media platforms, a lot of them do ban hate speech. They have their own definition of what hate speech is, and they do suspend accounts based on the use of hate speech. Even then, it's hard. Hate speech is very, the reason why the First Amendment protects it is because it's hard to differentiate hate speech from legitimate political expression. For example, Facebook was taking down hate speech posts and suspending users who made hate speech posts, but it turned out that a lot of the users they were suspending were actually just like giving examples of hate speech that had been directed at them. You know, it's not the easiest thing for an algorithm to pick up on. It's not the easiest thing for a human being to decide on. So while these social media platforms do have policies against hate speech and they censor hate speech, it's hard for them to get it right. And the First Amendment protects it in part because we certainly would not want criminal penalties or something like that on something that can be so subjective and in the eye of the beholder.
So then, okay, that makes sense, because then you think about something that can be, you can be punished for under the law is a hate crime. And that's obviously different than hate speech. So if hate speech then turns into a hate crime, that's when you can have penalties against you.
Exactly. Like the idea is that there's speech and then there's conduct. And as soon as your speech turns into conduct, for instance, like, you know, I mentioned that the First Amendment does not protect true threats against someone's life. But there's a question of what is a true threat exactly? Like, I feel like people use the phrase, like, I'm going to kill you like a million times a day, but how do you know that they mean it? And that is entirely context. The Supreme Court once issued an opinion that essentially dealt with two cross-burning cases. And what's interesting is that one of the incidents of cross-burning was somebody burning a cross in his backyard, and the other was someone burning a cross essentially on an African-American family's lawn. And I think it was Justice O'Connor who wrote that there's a difference between those two things. They might seem like the same type of expression, but if you look at the context, one could be seen as like, this is a symbolic gesture, not a great one, but it is a terrible symbolic gesture that somebody made on their property. The other seems to be intended to put a family in fear for its life.
Wow. Yeah. Cause I think about people burning American flags and nothing makes me more upset, and burning a cross, nothing makes me more upset. And that is a way to communicate without using words. So that does get a little hairy, right, with the law?
Oh, yeah. Well, the First Amendment protects expression and speech, but speech doesn't necessarily mean everything that comes out of your mouth. It can also mean symbolic gestures. Like you said, burning a flag, flashing a peace sign, kneeling during the national anthem. There's a lot of ways to express yourself that don't actually involve spoken words.
And what does the right to petition the government mean? Are there any restrictions?
Oh, yeah. The right to petition is the right to ask the government to redress any wrongs that it's committed. If you're upset with like a government policy, to ask it to ask the government to change that policy. It's what protects our people's rights to lobby. So there are restrictions on that. Like, for instance, with lobbying, like if you If you're an organization that spends a certain amount of time on lobbying, you have to disclose certain things. So there are some restrictions on it, but ultimately it's this core right to ask the government for what you want.
All right, we've got to step aside for a quick recess, but we'll be back right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I do have a question about religion, because so we were talking about just even people getting upset and using hateful speech and everything. I was walking into Fox the other day, and this woman was just very angry for no reason, I believe. And she started yelling, you know, F you and you're anti-democracy and all of this to me. And then I just kept walking. I said, oh, you know what? God bless. Have a great day. And she was like, you know, God doesn't exist, you dumb expletive. And so I just kept walking, and then it made me think about what happens in a classroom when you're in school. And for instance, I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and we would pray before every single class. We would stand and pray. But what if there was someone in there that's an atheist, and then their parents want to sue the school because you're talking about religion, but they don't want religion to be communicated, but then people like me want to express my religion?
Well, if you're in a Catholic school, then...
Yeah, I guess that was a bad example. Really. Let's say I was not in a Catholic school and you were still praying before class.
The freedom of religion, it prevents the government from discriminating and like holding one religion above another. Mm-hmm. And it also prevents the government from like establishing its own religion and espousing its own religion. Kind of a reaction to the whole Church of England thing after the American Revolution. They wanted a system where the government could not espouse religious views like that. So public schools are considered government entities. So the First Amendment applies to them. They're not supposed to hold one religion above the other. They're not supposed to espouse religion. So in the case of people like a teacher leading prayers in class, that would be seen as like a public official essentially sort of endorsing a specific religion and asking the students to go along with it. So that would be prohibited by the First Amendment. But if you had students who said, hey, let's set up like a club after school so we can pray, that if like the administration was like, well, you can't do that, then that's discriminating against their religious expression. So that would be prohibited by the First Amendment as well.
What if you're a teacher in a public school and you want to hang a cross at the front of your classroom? Can you do that?
No, that would be prohibited by the First Amendment because it is... Well,
because then
there's
the teacher,
like some gray area here,
right?
Here's what I think. This is do not consider this a legal opinion. This is just a Letha opinion right now. But I think if you were to hang a cross at the front of your classroom and you're a public school teacher, you are probably running afoul of the First Amendment because it does seem like as a teacher, you are endorsing Christianity in the classroom. If on the other hand, you are wearing a cross, I would say that that is your personal religious belief, and it doesn't come across as this classroom is a Christian classroom. It's more like, hey, I'm a practicing Christian teacher. Does that make sense?
Definitely. Because then my mind goes, okay, well, if the teacher wants to be protected his or herself under the First Amendment and they want to hang a cross, then that's their freedom to be able to express their own religion. But you're saying since it's in a place... That kind of makes it a little bit more, it's in a place.
Everything about the First Amendment is about context, you know,
yeah.
Like the same symbol can mean different things depending on where you put it. If it's the kind of thing where if you walk into a classroom as a student and there is a cross at the front of it, you know, you'd get the impression like, oh, this is a Christian classroom, which again is totally fine at the Catholic school that you attended. But at a public school that seems awfully like a government entity is saying this is the religion of the classroom, right? But if you are a teacher and you're wearing a cross, that's more, I don't think as a student, again, it's all context. I don't think a student would necessarily look at that and think like, oh, this is a Christian classroom. I think that it would just, they would look at it and think this is a teacher's personal beliefs. Again, that's just how I would see it. But there's probably, if you had a court case of million different contextual factors you would weigh there.
Well, speaking of context, have you been following the Amber Heard Johnny Depp case?
Yeah, that's been interesting.
Right? Because that's a First Amendment thing too, because it's defamation, right?
That's right.
So what are your thoughts on that?
So the way that defamation law works, there are different standards for a private person to prove that they have suffered defamation and for a public figure to prove that they've suffered defamation. If you're a private person, and that's just because, like, if you're a private person, you don't have a lot of ways to defend yourself if you're defamed. But if you're a public figure, you usually have a platform where you can fight back against any lies that you think that somebody is spreading about you. So that's the standard that basically Johnny Depp has to establish in order to win this. I think this case, though, hinges around... one defense against a defamation suit is that what you said was true. Truth is always a defense, because defamation is a false statement made about someone that damages their reputation. So if it's not a false statement, then it's not defamation. So I think that a lot of the trial, as if I'm correct, is hinging around whether Amber Heard's accusations are true or not.
What do you think, just personally?
As a lawyer,
yeah.
I can't say. I mean, I've been following the trial. I haven't been following it closely enough to actually.
Oh, man. Yeah, I thought I'd get it out of you. Bummer. I know it's very tough. It's very tough. You know, there's also this whole thing. When you're younger, you're always taught never shout fire in a crowded place. Never say gun or bomb or anything in an airport. So does the First Amendment protect people in that case?
Well, first of all, you should definitely shout fire in a crowded theater if there is a fire in
right,
the theater.
Right, right. That is an important distinction. This is why you are the lawyer and I am not.
It's always context, right?
Yeah.
The idea is that, when you limit speech, when you make laws that limit speech, it's because, like, well, if you are shouting fire in a crowded theater just for kicks and waiting for everybody to stampede out and get hurt, like, that's not protected speech. That was speech that was meant to cause this harm. So that's where that reasoning comes from. It's personally, I have never really liked the fire in a crowded theater thing, because it comes from a Supreme Court case where everybody somehow thinks that the case is about somebody shouting fire in a crowded theater, but it wasn't. It was during World War I, and this guy was passing out pamphlets saying that, like, this war is immoral. If you are drafted, don't go. And he was arrested for that. And he said that this was a violation of his First Amendment rights. And, you know, the court at the time, Oliver Wendell Holmes, I believe, wrote the opinion. And he was like, well, I mean, First Amendment rights aren't unlimited. You can't just shout fire in a crowded theater. And to me, like, the idea that you would compare shouting fire in a crowded theater to a guy, like, handing out pamphlets like that, I don't think that is an accurate comparison. And then later, like, Justice Holmes' opinions, like, seem to back away from that stance, you know, and we're much more protective of political speech and, you know, political activism. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that fire in a crowded theater, I feel like, as a phrase, I always just immediately think of that case, which I think is just that's not a good example.
Right.
But to your point, yeah, there are limits to what the First Amendment protects.
Yeah, I mean, to just even discuss the First Amendment, there are so many intricacies of this, because, you know, you can go one way or another way with it. And like you said, context is so important. So what about fighting words, you know, that are likely to provoke violence and you're saying something. So you, like, hate speech, for instance, that those could be fighting words, right? You incite somebody to act violently, you threaten their life. They feel like they need to protect themselves. I mean, does the First Amendment protect you in that sense?
Oh, great question. Fighting words is interesting because it comes from a Supreme Court case in 1942 that basically said, if you are saying something to an individual directed at that individual face-to-face confrontation and you really are just saying it because you want to provoke a violent reaction, then those are fighting words and they are not protected by the First Amendment. Okay. All right. And you're right. If you used hate speech in that specific context, like you're shouting a slur at someone in order to provoke this confrontation, then sure. You might say that's not protected by the First Amendment, but I will add that this is kind of a narrow exception, the fighting words exception. And also the Supreme Court hasn't mentioned it in like since 1942. So I'm not saying they've never say like overturned it, but it just has not really been mentioned in a very long time.
Yeah. So if a Mets fan went up to a Yankees fan and said, "Go Mets, they're so much better than the Yankees," that could be fighting words and someone could get punched, but that's not protected under the First Amendment.
I mean, I would say that
depends on how avid of a sports fan you are.
You know what? I suppose you could consider those fighting words and like, you know, when you're defending yourself later saying like, look, it was my First Amendment right to say that. I think you could bring up the fact that this fighting words exception, just like it doesn't really come up a lot in court. I wouldn't really like call it the best leg to stand on, but yeah, you know, you could make that argument.
I love it. So then what do you think is the most important thing that people should know about the First Amendment? Obviously we talked about a lot today, but just kind of, if you wanted to boil it down to the basics and why we should care.
Ooh. Okay. So I think that what's important to remember is that First Amendment rights are indivisible. We like your rights are my rights. So even if we disagree on everything, and even if I hate you and you hate me, I don't want your rights to be taken away from you, because inevitably they will eventually be taken away from me. It's about, because it's ultimately not pitting one group's speech against another. It's pitting all of us against the government, really. How much power do you want to give the government to censor your speech?
Interesting. Well, luckily I don't hate you. Hopefully you don't hate me. I appreciate you coming on to have this discussion, because like I said, it's been so, you know, we've talked about it a lot recently, just with everything that's been going on. So I appreciate your insight and you breaking it down for me, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Of course. Thank you. This was a great discussion.
All right, if you missed anything from class, these are my office hours, and here are some top takeaways about the First Amendment. Number one. So we know what the First Amendment protects, but what isn't protected under the First Amendment are things like making true threats on someone else's life, blackmail, perjury. Surprisingly, hate speech is protected under the First Amendment, because according to Lutta, that's more of a subjective argument. Number two. Lutta says that when social media platforms disable users' accounts, it's not in the legal scope of the First Amendment because they're private companies, but it does affect the conversations we have in public. And number three, she stressed the importance of context when talking about the First Amendment. You have to ask, what's the situation, what's the action that's being questioned, and what's the motive behind what's being said? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast on the First Amendment. For more podcasts, you can go to foxnewspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave us a review. This has been Getting Schooled with Abby Hornacek on the Fox News Podcast Network. Class dismissed.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.